want to continue looking at some places where we get stuck. These are places that we've all been stuck in. Some are more prone to get stuck than others, but none of us, of course, are exempt, and we've all been stuck in all of these places. We first looked at self-pity. We've all been there. And again, last week, looking at anger, trying to understand what anger is, and we've seen that, of course, it's an emotion, and emotions produce behaviors, and we must not confuse the two. They both need to be dealt with, and both need to be confessed if they are sinful. We see that anger, like any emotion, has a powerful influence upon the mind. As soon as we experience an emotion, it immediately produces thoughts, whether they be productive or counterproductive. Emotions always produce thoughts, produce thought patterns. It affects the will, because the thoughts and the will, of course, go hand in hand. Has a great impact upon the body, and then, of course, it has an impact upon our lives. We saw last week that anger has a biological component, that is simply it's an emotion that God has given us. There's also a learned component. We, to some degree, when we were being raised, we were taught to some degree what to be angry with, what to be angry at. We were also taught to some degree how to handle our anger, how to express our anger. So there is a learned component as well. It brings us to the question in Ephesians 4, verse 26. We'll again turn there. It says, "Be ye angry," which shows, of course, that anger is not always sinful. "Be ye angry and sin not." As soon as we're angry, as we saw last week, whether it's justifiable or not, as soon as we experience the emotion of anger, we are in danger. We are in danger of sin. The very emotion of anger puts us in a very dangerous place. And he says here, "Be ye angry and sin not." That is, in your anger, do not sin. The "be ye angry" is, again, because some people will take license with those words, "be ye angry," and feel that they have a scriptural basis to be angry at whatever they please. But the "be ye angry" is strictly limited. It is strictly restricted, and it's qualified with the following words: sin not. That is, we must not sin in the basis of our anger. We must not have a sin basis for our anger, and we must not sin in our expression of anger. Sinful anger, as we've already seen, of course, is very destructive. And all anger has the ability to be destructive. It's very detrimental to ourselves. It's detrimental to others. It's very injurious to ourselves and to others. It's really one of the most dangerous attitudes, and certainly the most dangerous emotion that a person can have. Anger, if we're not careful, will cause us to make wrong assumptions. It'll cause us to see simply out of the lens of anger. And when we see strictly out of the lens of anger. We're going to have a distorted perspective, a distorted view. It, of course, leads us to draw wrong conclusions. And again, the very moment we feel anger, we are in danger at that very moment of sinning. Not only are we in danger of sinning, but we are in danger of becoming stuck in anger. It's very, very easy to become stuck in anger, and that's why the Holy Spirit led Paul to write, "Let not the sun go down upon your wrath." And that's why the psalmist wrote in Psalm 37 and verse 8, "Cease from anger." That is, do not stay angry. Because if you do, you will be stuck. So we're going to look tonight at some anger that is definitely sin-based. And then we want to look at the cycle of getting stuck in this anger. But anger that is sin-based will begin with one that many people would deny, but all anger against God is sinful. It might surprise you, it might not, that it's unbelievable how many so-called Christian writers say that there is nothing wrong with being angry with God. All anger against God is sinful. All anger against God. You may say, well, there's places in the Bible where it seems like God's people were angry with God, no doubt. And I doubt if any of us can honestly say, if we were to really examine it, that we have never been in that position, that we have never not been angry with God. So all anger against God is sin. One example, of course, would be Jonah. If we turn to Jonah chapter 4, Jonah chapter 4, we know that God called Jonah to go to Nineveh to preach the gospel to them. It would be about the equivalent of God calling us to go to Iran and preaching the gospel. They were bitter enemies. And Jonah fled, and the reason Jonah fled was, some would say, well, he just didn't want to go. Well, that's part of it. But the real reason is because Jonah knew that God would bless the preaching of his word and that Nineveh would be spared. And Jonah did not want that. Jonah's plan was different than God's plan. And in Jonah chapter 4, we read, "It displeased Jonah exceedingly, and he was very angry. And he prayed unto the Lord, and he did so in anger." He was very angry, and he prayed unto the Lord. And as you look at this, you see that his anger is really with the Lord. His anger is with what the Lord has done. And he said, "I pray thee, O Lord, was not this my saying when I was yet in my country? Therefore I fled before unto Tarshish." In other words, I knew you were going to bless them, and this is why I fled to Tarshish. "For I knew that thou art a gracious and merciful, slow to anger, and of great kindness, and repentest thee of the evil." He was angry with who God was. He was angry with what God had done. "Therefore now, O Lord, take, I beseech thee, my life from me, for it is better for me to die than to live." The Lord intervened. The Lord answered him and said, "Doest thou well to to be angry. He addressed the root of the problem. But again, to be angry with God is never right. It is wrong. It is always wrong. To disapprove of what God has done. Anytime we disapprove of what God has done, we are wrong. Anytime we are displeased at what God does or does not do, we are wrong. And if we're not careful, we will, our disapproval, our displeasure will result in anger. Now you think about someone who is angry with God. There are a lot of ways that people express their anger toward God. Most of God's people are not going to shake their fist at God. They're not going to curse God. But they will, why? I don't understand. I don't understand why. You better be careful, because that can turn into anger very, very quickly if it hasn't already. But when you think about someone who's angry with God, there's arrogance there, which is sin. I mean, for any creature to be angry with God, that creature must have an attitude of arrogance. So that's sinful. Must also have an attitude of self-will and rebellion. They're all present. Arrogance, self-will, rebellion, all are present when there is anger at God. Now, many in so-called Christian circles don't like to talk about anger with God, and really, many don't even believe it exists, or they will pretend it does not exist. But I don't think that anger at God is all that uncommon. And I'm not talking about with the world. I'm talking about with God's people. I don't think it's all that uncommon. I think it's more common than you and I would like to think. It is one of those sins that is rarely admitted. You will rarely hear someone admit, "I am angry at God." Very rarely will a child of God say that. And usually when a person is angry at God, a child of God that is, they redirect their anger. They redirect their anger toward other objects. And that leads them to believe that they're not angry with God. But all they've done is redirect it. Their real anger is with God. But they redirect it and they express it toward other objects. But be sure of this. Anger at God is real. It is real. And I believe it lies at the bottom of many of the problems and issues of God's people. If some would just be honest and really begin to dig into their own hearts and minds, they might find, they may uncover anger at God. And that, of course, all anger against God is sin. There should be no question about that. Anger also is sin-based when it is the result of things that really don't matter. It's amazing how angry we can get at things that do not matter one iota. And all such anger is sin-based. Now, we know that we are surrounded by vanity and our lives are filled with vanity. And when the vain things of life become major sources of anger, that is a sin-based anger. When someone gets angry because they missed a sale on something, that's sin-based anger. When someone gets angry because their sport team lost, that's sin-based anger. There's no way of getting around, because those things don't matter. In the big picture, they don't matter. And the truth is, many times people get more angry at things that don't matter than things that do matter. So anytime our anger is the result of things that just don't matter. Now, I realize that the person who is angry at things that don't matter, they think it does matter. But again, that just shows how wrong their priorities are and just how fleshly and carnal they really are. Anger also is sinful based when it is selfishly motivated. We need to ask ourselves, why am I angry? Why am I angry? What is motivating my anger? We saw last week Moses had what we could call righteous indignation. David had the same thing when he heard the parable from Nathan. And in both cases, their anger was against sin. It was sin that motivated their anger. In 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 31, we're told that we're to do everything for the glory of God. That includes our emotions. That includes the emotion of anger. We are to be angry when God is not glorified. But again, even then, we're still in danger. But if our anger is selfish, then that is sin-based anger. When people are looking for reasons to be angry, and there's a lot of them out there, people who just look for reasons to be angry. They'll come in church and they'll just look for a reason to be angry. So they will, in their minds, justify why they're not coming back. But when that's all selfishly motivated anger. When we look for reasons to be angry, you begin to focus on the faults of others. You begin to focus on what you perceive to be a fault in someone else. But again, if you're looking through the lens of anger, your perception can be way off. It's the same individual, Matthew 7, verse 3, that looks for the splinter in his brother's eye. He's looking for a reason to be angry. That's selfishly motivated anger. And again, this is sin-based. When a person becomes angry when they don't get their way, that's sin-based anger. I think of Ahab, and he didn't get Naboth's vineyard. Naboth wouldn't give him his vineyard. That angered Ahab. And Ahab got stuck in self-pity, and then we know that Jezebel took care of the matter. But when we don't get our own way, that's sin-based anger. When someone pouts because they didn't get their way, when someone gives someone the silent treatment because they didn't get their way, that's sin-based anger. You need to repent of that. That's selfish anger. When a person becomes angry out of envy, same thing. It's sin-based anger. Notice in 1 Samuel, Saul, of course, would be a good example of someone who was angry out of envy in 1 Samuel 18. We'll read verses 6 through verse 9. And it came to pass, as they came when David was returned from the slaughter of the Philistines, that the women came out of all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing to meet King Saul, with tabrets with joy and with instruments of music. And the women answered one another as they played, and said, Saul hath slain his thousands, and David his ten thousands. And Saul was very wroth. He was very angry. And the saying displeased him. He wasn't angry at the women who were singing the praises of David. He was angry at David. And just as a side note, when someone praises you publicly, you are in danger of becoming an object of anger, because that's human nature. Sad to say, that's the way human beings are. They become envious. So when that person is praised, they are in danger of becoming an object of anger. And so we see that Saul was very wroth, and saying displeased him, and he said, they have ascribed unto David ten thousands, and to me they have scribed but thousands. They have given more credit to David than they have me. And he was angry. That's sin-based anger. When the wrong person is thanked for something, and you should have been the person thanked, and you get angry, that's sin-based anger. That's selfishly motivated anger. And this was the case with Saul. And Saul eyed David through the lens. He watched David from that day forward, and he did so through the lens of envy. He did so through the lens of anger. And everything that David could not do anything right in the eyes of Saul, because Saul, again, was looking through the lens of envy and anger. When a person becomes angry because things are out of their control, many times people become angry if they don't feel they're in control. That's sin-based anger. That's selfishly motivated anger. When a person becomes angry because their pride has been wounded, that too is sin-based anger. And notice in 2 Kings chapter 5, 2 Kings chapter 5, verses 10 and verse 11. And Elisha sent a messenger unto him, saying, go and wash in Jordan seven times, and thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean. But Naaman was wroth and went away. That's how he expressed his anger. He went away and said, behold, I thought he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and strike his hand over the place and recover the leper. Naaman was angry because he was proud. Naaman was angry because he thought he should have been treated differently. And therefore he became angry. And all anger that is based in pride is selfish anger. And all anger that is based in pride is sin-based anger. Also, anger that is sinful, when it's used to as a tool to manipulate. You have to train children from an early age that they cannot use anger as a tool to manipulate. A lot of adults revert, and they use anger as a tool to get their way, as a tool to manipulate others. And that, of course, is sinful. And it's, again, gets back to really being stuck in the pit of self. But many will use anger in their desire for power, in their personal relationships, and when it is used to manipulate individuals, when it is used to manipulate situations in order to obtain power or get one's own way, that is sin-based anger, and it's also a sinful expression of anger. And it, again, is a result of being stuck in self. Anger is sinful when it is redirected. And this is very, very common, especially amongst husbands and wives. We've already said also anger toward God most of the time is redirected. That is, it's expressed toward another object. But when we redirect our anger, we're angry at so-and-so, but we, for whatever reason, we're not going to express our anger towards so-and-so, so we're going to express it toward this person over here who has nothing to do with it. That's sinful. That's redirected anger. That is dishonest. And that is sin-based anger. When anger is redirected from the real issue toward other issues. Again, husbands and wives can argue about some pretty foolish things, but I don't believe they're that ignorant. I don't believe they're that foolish to really argue about the things they're arguing about. That's really not the real issue. What they're doing is they're redirecting their anger. Something else has happened, and this can go on for years. This can go on for a whole married life. Husbands and wives really don't get to the root of their anger, and they just argue about everything. I'm not going to say that. When you spend a lifetime redirecting your anger, never addressing the real issue of the anger, that's sinful. That is sin-based anger. And again, it's very, very common. Another sinful anger is anger that would just simply result from suspicion. You become suspicious of somebody, so you get angry. Suspicion is a pretty weak foundation. Pretty weak. So when our anger is based on suspicion, it's sinful anger. When our anger is based upon wrong assumptions, and again, when we look through the lens of anger, we're going to have wrong assumptions, and we're going to have wrong perceptions. It's almost shocking the assumptions we can make when angry and how we see things when angry. So, sinful, self-interest, self-importance, self-gratification, me-focused, entitlement attitude, reward-oriented attitude. All these things distort our perception. All these things distort our assumptions. And soon we get angry at things that really don't even exist. But because of our own selfishness, our anger becomes sin-based. When we're stuck in the pit of pride, we're going to get angry very easily. When we're stuck in the pit of pride, everything an individual thinks they heard, they become angry about. I think they said so-and-so, and they get angry. You don't even know if they said it, but you think they did. And they think they heard something, and they think they saw something, and everything is viewed through the lens of self. All anger is going to be sinful when that happens. This is when the individual is quickly angered. We read in Proverbs several times that we're not to be soon angry. Soon angry. And people have it wrong today. They say, well, so-and-so has a temper problem. No, that's not the real problem. Their problem is self. They're stuck on self. And people that are stuck on self are very quickly angered. People who are upset with the past are very quickly angered. People who want to blame everyone else for everything are very quickly angered. The problem is not the temper. The temper is only a manifestation of another problem, a far, far more serious problem. So when we're angry without a valid cause, even if we think we have a valid cause, if it is not a valid cause, it is sinful anger. Anytime our anger leads to evil plotting, evil intentions, that of course would be sinful anger. In Psalm 37, we read here, cease from anger, forsake wrath. So in the context of anger and wrath, he goes on to say, fret not thyself. Again, in the context of anger and wrath, fret not thyself. That is, do not concern oneself in any wise or in any way to do evil. That's sin. That's sinful. That's sinful anger. This sin-based anger is contrary to love that Paul speaks of in 1 Corinthians 13, verse 5, where it says, love thinketh no evil. Anger, that's all anger can think, is evil. I'm going to do such and such. I'm going to show them. Be careful. Love thinketh no evil. But anger and wrath frets itself in trying to find ways to express their anger. So sin-based and harbored anger leads to wrong thoughts toward others, serves as a major distraction in our life, and of course, it is sin. And then any anger that we allow to take up residence in our heart and begin to control us, that is sin. And that's why Paul says, let not the sun go down upon your wrath. We are warned not to carry our anger with us. This is what the psalmist is talking about there in Psalm 37, verse 8. Cease. Cease, that means halt from anger. It means stop. It means put an end to it. It means terminate it. Draw it to a close. Let it be over. Cease from anger. Do not carry it with you. Even if it is justifiable, it will destroy you if you allow it to take up residence in your mind, in your heart. Resident anger in Ephesians 4, verse 27, gives place to the devil. What that simply means is it gives him opportunity to work. As soon as we let anger reside in our hearts, we have given the devil an opportunity to work in our life. We have given the devil an opportunity to make inroads into our lives. And believe me, you give the devil opportunity, he will take every one of them. He will take every opportunity you give him and more. And when we allow anger to reside in our hearts, to take up residence, and the way we know that that has happened is it begins to control us. It begins to control our day. It begins to control our thoughts. We can't get away from it. It's taking up residence. You'd better do something. Well, I've got a right to be mad. You may have. But if it's taking up residence, you've given the devil an opportunity to destroy you. So when anger begins to control, when it begins to govern our minds, how we function through the day, as soon as that anger takes residence in our hearts, it distorts everything. And it feeds. Our distortions feed more anger. It distorts perspective. It distorts reality, causing one to again make distorted assumptions, distorted judgments, drawing distorted conclusions. And what resident anger does, it begins to magnify the wrong. May have been a little thing, but once anger takes residence in the heart, that anger is magnified hundredfold. Or that the reason for the anger, the wrong, the wrongs are magnified. Or the perceived wrongs. It can be a real wrong, it can be a perceived wrong. In this case, it really doesn't matter, because resident anger magnifies whatever it is. Everything is magnified. And then the individual begins to rehash. They begin to rehash situations through the lens of anger. In all their rehashing, they may not really look at the facts, because they're looking at everything through the lens of anger. But they begin to rehash situations. They begin to rehash the actions of others. And what resident anger will eventually do is it begins to revise situations. It begins to revise what really happened. And again, all of this just feeds that emotion of anger. So it revises situations, it revises the actions of others, and the only way resident anger can stay resident is we have to feed it. We have to keep it alive. Or we allow someone else to keep it alive. How many times someone has almost been over something, and then here she comes or he comes and starts it all over again? They're of the devil. They're doing the work of the devil. My point is, resident anger must be fed. Whether you feed it or whether you allow someone else to feed it, it has to be fed. And if you feed it, it will stay. But it will not only stay, it'll grow. So when we allow anger to take up residence in our heart and mind, it is something that we allow. Perhaps because an emotion to some degree is involuntary. Perhaps we could not help the emotion of anger, but you can cease from it. You can cease from it. And that is your responsibility to do so. So when we are being managed, when we are being controlled by anger, anger has taken up residence in our hearts, and that, of course, is sinful. To deny resident anger doesn't make it go away. Doesn't make it go away. To hide it doesn't make it go away. Doesn't make it any less real. It's still there. And it will show itself over and over and over again. But when we allow anger to reside in our hearts, it is then that we are stuck in anger. And that will derail us spiritually. So how do we get stuck? How does this come about that we allow anger to take up residence in our heart? First of all, there is the original wrongdoing by someone else or hurt that brings about the initial anger. Again, this could be real. It can be imagined. It can be perceived. But there is, it all begins with something. Something triggered the emotion of anger. So that's where it begins. And then when we begin to review it over and over and over and over again, we're on our way becoming entrenched in anger. And again, the mental review may be accurate, but what good does it do you? Even if your mental review is accurate, what good does it do you to keep reviewing it? Doesn't do you any good at all. But your mental review may be inaccurate also. And if your mental review is viewed through the lens of anger, I can almost guarantee you your review is inaccurate. May not be totally inaccurate, but it is inaccurate. The mental review, anger and resentment, when we begin to review, we begin to feed anger, we begin to feed resentment. Things begin to fester inside of us, and now we feel more hurt than we did when it first happened. Now we feel more pain than when we did when it first happened. And now what happens? Now we're angry than we were before. We fed it. It'll destroy you. It'll destroy you. The continuous mental review leads to accumulating. That is, as we review situations, as we review what we think has been a wrongdoing toward us or toward another, and we just keep reviewing it and reviewing it, what are we doing? We are beginning to collect, we're beginning to gather, we're beginning to stockpile what we perceive to be our support for our anger. And we begin to stockpile things. This is why I'm angry. Man, we can build a mountain. But when you begin to stockpile reasons to support your anger, you're stuck. You're stuck in a sinful anger. So this continuous review leads to accumulating. And when you begin to accumulate, you begin to stockpile, that's going to lead you down the road of self-pity. Woe is me. They did me wrong. And you just continue to stockpile. And now when you're stuck in self-pity, it's not my fault. Look at what they did. And now you're stuck not only in anger, you're also stuck in self-pity. And you look at individuals that are stuck in anger, I can almost guarantee you they're also stuck in self-pity. Almost always, if not always. So this mental review, this accumulating, this self-pity leads to an absolute refusal to let go. They will not let go. And resident anger, as it progresses, people become more and more entrenched in their angry feelings. And if you're not careful, it will soon define who you are. It'll soon define who you are. You'll become so trapped, so entrenched, that it defines you. And you absolutely refuse to let it go. I am convinced there are people today that if they were to let go of their anger, they would not know how to live. Because they've lived with it so long. It would be such a massive change in their life that they wouldn't be able to handle the change. So we get to the point where we will not let go. Well, they never said they were sorry, so I have no responsibility to forgive them. You better read your Bible over again. That's not what the Bible teaches. That's not what it teaches. Well, if they didn't ask for forgiveness, I don't have any accountability to forgive. Yes, you do. You're to forgive 70 times 7. You're still accountable. To stay angry is not going to help you. Again, it's going to destroy you. And when a person gets to this point where they will not let go of their anger, they will become offended at anyone who tries to help them. Anyone who tries to get them to let go of their anger, now they're going to be angry at them. And pretty soon they're angry at everybody. They're angry at everybody. And they will not let go. When that happens, we are stuck. And this progression that leads to resident anger results in hostility, results in bitterness, results in a lot of destructive attitudes, and we'll look into that next week. Brother Mark, if you'd come and lead us in a verse of song. Let's all stand. Brother Mark will lead us in singing.